Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation and by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. Also by lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/hamnation. That's lynda.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 114, September 11th, 2013. Bob works Germany on a 1962 Hallicrafters. Good evening, everybody. This is K9EID, and this is Ham Nation, and we're glad you're here. It's kind of a special night, and we want to talk a little bit about it, and we're going to bring the whole crew in tonight to help do that. Gordon, how are you doing? Gordon West from Costa Mesa.
I'm doing fine, Bob. The Santa Barbara Ham Fest this past weekend was a success. It wasn't big, but it was intimate, and it was great and chock full of great presenters. This week, you know, is the Route 66 get-together, and they're on 14-266. And this weekend, Bob, coming up is the big VHF UHF ARRL contest. So those of you out there, be sure and come up on VHF and UHF this weekend. But you know, today's a very special day, one that radio played a very important part, September 11th. And this was a chilling communications, and I'll play just about 10 seconds of it, that came over the speakers of fire departments, police departments, and what we'll talk about tonight, Homeland Security, U.S. Coast Guard. It was chilling to hear that first call.
The World Trade said that Tower Number 1 is on fire. The whole outside of the building was just a huge explosion.
The World Trade Center, Tower Number 1 on fire. What a chilling call. And we'll learn more about emergency radios and frequencies tonight. So, Bob, back to you.
Thank you, Gordo. And yes, we were all, of course, today remembering where we were at that moment. And I was in the kitchen in Belleville getting ready to go to the plant, and had the Today Show on. And Sarah said, "Hey, come here. And we saw that plane just as I went in, that second one went in. And I said, "Whoa, they must have misfired something here." And of course, immediately she said, no. She said, "I think it's a terrorist." And of course, nobody knew at the time. Was it a pilot that went astray? No, it wasn't. And what a sad time that was, that whole day. But I certainly remember it. Don Wilbanks, you're in the broadcast industry. Where were you that day? And how did you emotionally handle 9/11 at your station?
Well, I was in between radio jobs at the time, so I was not affiliated with any radio stations at the time. But it's one of the, you know, I'll be 53 this year, and so I wasn't around for Pearl Harbor. Everyone says, "Well, you know, where were you when on Pearl Harbor Day? That was a milestone then." Or, "Where were you when JFK was shot?" Well, I was 3 years old during that, so I don't remember that either. But this is my, I guess, milestone day. You know, where were you at 9/11 for baby boomers, folks of my age? My wife and I were actually, we were in the New Orleans area. We went to we had an appointment. We were doing hypnosis for weight loss, oddly enough. And that morning we had a session. And walking out of the session, very relaxed from being woke up from being hypnotized, everyone was crowded around the televisions, you know, there in the office. And like, you know, what happens? Says, "Well, an airplane just hit the World Trade Center." And then my cell phone went off, and my son, who was a year and a half, the lady who lives next door to us, the babysitter, said, "An airplane just hit the World Trade Center." And we're standing there watching it. And then, you know, the second one hit. And we're like, "Oh, my God." And yeah, it's just one of those days. And you see the flag behind me and the Patriot Guard rider flag behind me. I no longer have my motorcycle, but when I did have my bike, I was very honored to be a part of the Patriot Guard riders. And, of course, 2 million of the Patriot Guard riders are in Washington, D.C. right now, showing support for our country. And I've attended several military funerals as a Patriot Guard rider holding the flag, honoring the dead heroes. And none of them over 28, by the way, the funerals, the several funerals that I went to. And very, very moving. And so the utmost respect from my heart to those in the military and first responders and all those people who lost their lives on that day, just what, 12 years ago.
Well, we all remember that, and I know the amateur radio community played a big part in all of that. George, where were you on 9/11? How did that affect you?
Well, you know, I work from home. My office and my shack are the same building, and I had just come out and gone to work, and as was my norm then, I tuned into KPEG, a radio station in Santa Cruz, California. I used to listen to them back then, and I heard them say something about it, so I turned on the television and began watching. And, yeah, at that point, we really didn't know what was going on. And then, you know, we saw the second plane crash, and it became evident pretty quick what it was all about. And, boy, yeah, that's like one of those times that you'll always remember where you were and what you were doing. I remember when Kennedy was shot, I was first, second, or third grade, I'm not sure. But, you know, I was just beginning school, and I remember hearing about that at recess.
Well, I know how much all of us feel about that. We've talked about it off the air, but today's a day to remember, and we want to do be sure that all of the hams watching know what a big part that amateur radio played in that special day. Well, we want to have some fun here tonight. We've got a lot of good things going on. And, Gordo, I wanted to ask you one thing about your Hamfest last weekend. You said it wasn't well attended, but it was in the most beautiful place in the world. At least I think so. Santa Barbara is great. Did you do a workshop there?
Yes, I did one for ham radio instructors. And again, we've got a very special program, www.haminstructor.com. And boy, we packed the room, and we've got more folks teaching ham radio than we've ever had before. We had ARRL instructors, independent instructors, W5YI instructors, and they really tuned in and are going to register at www.haminstructor.com free to pick up their training materials over the internet and begin teaching classes. So it was a good session, and nothing was wrong with the Santa Barbara get-together. It's just that it was not real well publicized, but they did their best, and the forums were terrific. So out of a big group running the Santa Barbara Amateur Radio Club, six pulled it together, and they did it with style. Back to you, Bob.
That's great. Well, I knew that you had a big part to play there, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit. That's wonderful. And for anyone listening to us tonight and watching us tonight, you know, George and Gordon and I, we do ham fests and a lot of club meetings via Skype. And it's so important to have programming today, because club meetings sometimes can get a little boring. And you can have good programming, and it costs nothing. All you got to do is have a really strong, good internet signal, and you can have, we don't all do it together, we do it separately, but drop us an email and we'll come and visit you. I'm doing actually Hamfest this weekend in Kansas from right here. And we do all the charts and graphs and stuff. And the workshops are great because we can do our demo. So it's something for you to think about. And as Gordon is relating to, teaching is so important today in this hobby because a lot of guys want to get into it, but they think it's real difficult. And it's not if you have the right guidance. So to keep that in mind. Well, talking about teaching, here's a guy that'll teach you how to use a soldering iron, and he's the best at it. So down to Mississippi we go, and George, what is going on with your red soldering iron today?
Well, we didn't fire up the soldering iron this week, but I've got something here that's important nevertheless. You know, I can operate most bands and modes here in the shack. Of course, I got VHF and UHF and HF and some digital stuff. You know, I've got D-Star, and pretty much everybody sounds the same on there since most of them are using commercially manufactured radios or the DV dongle or the DVAP. Everybody's audio is usually pretty good, and things work out good there. But EchoLink is another story. You know, that's another digital mode that's been around for a good while. I say it's digital because it travels over the internet, but it's using analog audio. And you set up the software on your computer, and that's where you got a chance for problems. You can have bad audio levels. You can have problems getting connected properly. And that's kind of one of my pet peeves is all the problems I hear with EchoLink. So tonight, let's address that and take a look at a couple of the most common problems. I thought it might be a good time to discuss a couple of problems that people seem to keep having with EchoLink. Connecting, or if you do connect, you time out, and audio levels. Those just seem to keep coming up. So let's go over that and see what can be done. Let's talk about audio devices first. We'll click on Tools, and then Adjust Sound Devices, and Playback. And that'll bring up the Windows Volume Control that lets us see the playback level of the sound card. There may be several volume sliders there, but we only need the wave and the volume sliders. If there's a line in, we click mute on that because we don't want to feed the line in back out through our speakers. Now, if you're just plugging in a microphone and using EchoLink with the computer alone, then this setting is not going to be that critical. It would mostly just adjust the volume you want to hear out of your speakers or headphones. However, if you're connecting a radio with the computer to use EchoLink, then these settings become critical. In that case, the playback levels are adjusting the mic level that's feeding the radio. And you need to be careful. You want the VU to show right about here where it's just barely beginning to show yellow. You don't want it too low, and you certainly don't want it slapping the end of the scale either. Next, we want to check what Windows calls the record level, so we click on Options and Properties, and then we click the Recording button, and it shows a list down there in the bottom of the window of the different inputs that you can have for your sound card. Now, if you've got line in, that's definitely what you want to use. Do not use microphone there unless that's all you've got. You'll come out of the speaker jack on the radio and feed the line in of your sound card. When we were adjusting the playback controls earlier, that was actually adjusting the modulation input of the radio that we had connected. It picks up the audio that's coming from another EchoLink station over the internet and adjusts the level, feeding the radio. Now, for the recording control, we're doing right the opposite. We're adjusting the level that's coming over the air from the speaker out of the radio and feeding back into the computer, and that adjusts the level that the people listening on another EchoLink node will hear. We want to adjust it the same, being careful that we just get into the yellow, don't have it too high or too low. Now, in many cases, you'll be able to get away with just running simple patch cords between the radio and the computer. However, in some cases, you might have problems with hum or RFI or level matching. In that case, you'll need a little interface to go with the rig. And if you look back at episode 7 of AmateurLogic.tv, we introduced EchoLink in that show. And also showed how you could build a small audio interface to use between a rig and a computer. That's enough about audio, so let's talk about the internet side of Echo Link now. We'll want to go to the Windows Start button and access the control panel. We'll choose Network Connections, and we'll locate our LAN card, which is, in this case, Local Area Connection 3. We'll right-click that and then choose Properties. Now, what we're going to need to do is configure a static IP address for this computer. By default, Windows sets up all its connections as dynamic hosts, so your router is assigning an IP address. That's not going to work here because the router is going to be responsible for routing the information coming in on certain ports from the internet to this particular computer. And the only way it's going to know to locate this computer is by its IP address. So we'll choose Internet Protocol, TCP/IP, and then we'll choose Properties. And now here you can see that I have already entered an IP address for this computer. Normally, Windows would have it set to obtain an IP address automatically, but we need it set to use the following IP address. In this case, I have assigned 192.168.0.112 as the IP address for my Echo Link computer. Now, the subnet mask is 255.255.255.0 in most cases, and the default gateway on my machine here and my network is 192.168.0.1. I also use the preferred DNS server with the same number. Now, this could be different depending on who you're using for an internet service provider. A lot of DSL folks will find the default gateway and preferred DNS settings are different than the address of your router. That's a little beyond the scope of what I can cover here since there's so many different possible combinations. The main thing I wanted to point out was you need a static IP address so that Echo Link will work properly. Now let's bring up Internet Explorer just to make sure that our internet connection is working. And it appears that it is. Now let's go to Echo Link. We'll choose Tools and Setup. Then we'll choose Proxy. And we'll note that by default, Echo Link is set to Direct Connect, no proxy. That's where you want it, if at all possible. Now there's another setting down here, Use Specific Proxy, but that's not the preferred way. We will talk about it later, though. Now, the next thing we need to do is go into the setup screen of our router. On my particular D-Link router here, I use Internet Explorer, and I go to 192.168.0.1, and that brings up my router's setup page. I'll go to the Advanced tab, and then I need to set some port forwarding rules. If you look, you'll notice that I've set up two different port forwarding rules here. Both of them have the IP address of my Echo Link computer that I entered earlier. That's 192.168.0.112. On the top port forwarding rule, I set that one up for a traffic type of UDP, and I set a start range of 5198 and an end range of 5199. On the second port forwarding rule, I use the same IP address. This one I set the traffic type to TCP, and the address to 5200. Echo Link requires these exact ports to work properly. If you don't have them set right, then you'll get that dreaded timeout error. If you do have your computer, Echo Link, and your router set up for proper port forwarding, and you still can't connect or you still get timeout errors, then it's possible that the firewall on your computer or your antivirus or any malware program could be blocking the ports. You could try setting an exception for Echo Link in these programs, and that might possibly work. To determine if one of them is at fault, though, you might try temporarily disabling it and see if that helps. There could be times when it's just not possible to set a port forwarding rule in a router, like in the case when you're visiting a friend or you're at a hotel. Fortunately, there is a workaround for this. Go to Tools, and then choose Setup, and choose Proxy. As I mentioned earlier, by default, Echo Link prefers that you use direct connection, no proxy. But we're going to choose Public Proxy. We'll click Refresh List to get a listing of the currently available proxies on the internet. A proxy is simply a server that someone's graciously provided that can do the port forwarding for you, and it'll send you the Echolink data over a typical port that's normally open on your computer. The reason that you wouldn't normally want to do this is because of latency and the fact that these proxies come and go. So each time you connect to Echolink, you might have to find a different proxy. I'll choose a proxy from the list that looks like it's somewhere near my location, at least the same country when possible, then click OK. And it says proxy connected, fetching data, and it looks like we're connected to Echolink. So this is one way to get around the problems of port forwarding, but as I said earlier, only when you have to. Now, we've looked at Windows XP today, and the reason I did that is because my Echolink machine runs Windows XP. The settings on Windows 7 and other operating systems will be a little different. Basically, you need to do the same thing no matter which operating system you're running. I hope these tips have helped a little bit, and we won't be hearing distorted audio or timeout quite as often in the future. Good luck and happy Echolink. Well, there you go. If you follow those steps, and you might need to watch it again to get all of them. It was quite a few there. You shouldn't have problems anymore with Echolink in most conditions. And, you know, it only takes a few minutes to get it set up right. Once you got it, lock it down and leave it alone. Also, if you're changing sound cards frequently on your computer, you might find that those settings will change on you and you'll have to redo them. But it's, like I say, not that difficult. And it's one more way of communicating that you've got. You know, Bob, last week we talked about George EB3FZH on here. And, you know, he built our little RF sampler that you and I had made recently. Well, this week he wrote us and he said he's working on the detector part now and he'll let us know about that. But he's looking for something. He wants a JRC model JST-10 QRP. He wants that rig for his collection of Japanese radios. So if you got one, look up EB3FZH on QRZ. Get his email address there and let him know about it. He's having real problems trying to find that. And he just mentioned something here. His name is George, like mine, except it's spelled J-O-R-G-E, but it's pronounced George in English. And his last name, and I'm not sure I can pronounce this correctly, it's C-O-M-A-S, and so maybe that's Comas. And so basically his name sounds like similar to George Thomas. So and he said he's technical too. So a nice little aside there. Thanks, George. And maybe somebody can find that rig for you. You know, last week I asked a question. Can you measure the percentage modulation of a single sideband signal using the XY method that I showed? And the prize for that is going to be the HAL Radio Handbook, the latest edition here. And we had a number of answers on that, and boy, they were all over the place. My inclination was, no, you can't measure the percentage of modulation using the XY method with a scope that I was showing last week, because generally, the modulation is always going to be 100%. I mean, you know, the power is directly affected by modulation. When you have no modulation, you have no power. So that's what I was thinking, and I believe you agreed with that, didn't you, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. I don't see how you could do that. I mean, a single sideband is modulation. There shouldn't be any carrier. It better be about 40, 50 down. So, no, that's not the purpose, I don't think, George. I think you're right on that.
Yeah. So several people wrote me and gave me ways to do it. All of them had different ideas on it. So I'm not sure if someone in the chat room here knows how to do it for sure, then let us know, but we can't come up with a way to do it. So our winner this week was Mark KC9ZHR, and he said that, no, he doesn't think you can measure the percentage modulation of a single sideband signal because there's no carrier, you know, exactly what we were saying. So congratulations, Mark. You're going to win this copy of the HAL Ham Radio Handbook, a great book that Bob just recently updated here, and boy, I've got my copy and I really like it. You should get one too. But for next week, we've got another prize here. This is going to be one of the MFJ 24-hour dual clocks. It's, you know, something you need on your desk there when you're working those DX stations, and you want to know your local time and universal time coordinated. So if you think you'd like that, then answer me this. And you may have to do a little digging on this one, but it should be easy enough. What is the maximum transmitter power on an amateur station on 10.140 megahertz? Is it A, 200 watts, B, 1,000 watts, C, 1,500 watts, or D, 2,000 watts? And this is one of the questions in the general question pool on the amateur radio exams there. So you might look around there if you're trying to find the answer. But once again, what's the maximum power that you can run on 10.140 megahertz? And that should do it for Smoke and Solder this week. I'll be back a little bit later in the show. But right now, let's bring in Don here. And Don, we've got a new sponsor this week, don't we?
We do, as a matter of fact, and it kind of ties in with what you're talking about with Smoke and Solder. The more we learn about ham radio, the better we are at it, and the more you know, the more you can succeed. And Lynda.com, that's a brand new sponsor here to Ham Nation. We're proud to have them. Lynda.com, spelled with a Y, is an online learning company that will help anybody learn creative software, business skills. You can achieve personal and professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, you receive unlimited access to a huge library of high-quality, current, and very engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects. Now, I've been playing around on Lynda.com here a little bit, and I use a piece of software called Adobe Audition at work, and it's what I do my production on. That is a screenshot from the tutorial on using Adobe Audition. And that's what it looks like on my desk at work, just exactly like that. So if I'm doing audio production at work or here at home, I'm using Adobe Audition. And if I'm doing production on for the Ham Nation video, the news segment that you'll see a little later on, I use Windows Movie Maker. And that is the tutorial on Windows Movie Maker. Now, I also have a MacBook, and I want to learn how to use iMovie on the MacBook. And guess what? I found a video tutorial on MacBook, on iVideo for both the MacBook and the iPad. That's amazing. I've been digging around on Lynda.com and just having the best time. Now, how is it different from other free or open source video tutorials? Well, for one thing, you can, of course, go to YouTube and look up something, and you'll find little video snippets. Well, this has over 2,000 courses, new courses added daily, and some of these courses are hours long. I mean, they are very, very detailed. The instructors are working pros at the top of their field. They're expert teachers. The production is high quality, state-of-the-art studios. These are not homemade videos you're going to find on YouTube. It's curated course content. Every Lynda course is structured. You can find exactly what you want, learn from start to finish, or jump around specific chapters for quick answers. The transcripts are searchable, allows you to search inside a video, save time, find exactly what you're looking for. You can bookmark and play the playlist, organize your courses into a customized learning path. All levels, wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. It's not just software. It's over 2,000 courses and new stuff being added daily. You can watch it from your computer, from a tablet, your iPhone, your Android. Switch back and forth and pick up where you left off. It's a low monthly price of $25 a month. It gives you access to the entire course library. For $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. That includes exercise files that let you follow along the instructor's project. For instance, on the video project for iMovie, they have actual video snippets that you can put into iMovie and work along right with the instructor using the exact same files right there. You set the pace with mobile access. You learn where you want, when you want, and you can try Lynda.com right now. It's a 7-day free trial. Visit Lynda.com/hamnation. You can access the entire library, over 2,000 courses, free for a week. And it's lynda.com/hamnation. And we thank Lynda.com for their support of Ham Nation. So that's just, I've really been enjoying digging around in Lynda.com, and I think you will too. It's a very worthwhile thing and a great addition to Ham Nation. Now let's go and check out what's going on with Gordon and Gordon's Short Shots. Mr. West, if you please.
Okay, thanks, Don. And that Lynda.com with a Y looks interesting. Well, our short shots tonight will talk all about amateur radio and our involvement as an auxiliary to Mars military auxiliary radio system, United States Coast Guard auxiliary, Civil Air Patrol, and many other responsibilities that hams can take up. So let's take a look and see how important our role is. And tonight we're going to look at the United States Coast Guard auxiliary. Wow, that was quite a call. Well, the U.S. Coast Guard monitors the VHF, the local radio system. That is channel 16, and if you're into scanning, 156.8. Every boat that goes out of the harbor has that, and many boats inside the harbor have it as well. Channel 16 is the international distress and calling frequency, no matter where you cruise, whether it's just out to your local islands off the East Coast or Gulf or the West Coast, or out to about 20 or 30 miles, the VHF radio service, sponsored by the U.S. Coast Guard and monitoring for distress calls, is there to serve mariners. And they now have a new Rescue 21 system. They needed it because with 42,000 miles of coastline throughout the United States, 12,000 distress calls coming in over a year, over short range, the new Rescue 21 system gives them the capability to not only hear a distress call better, but also through the Doppler system, be able to determine latitude and longitude, as well as look at a GPS send out by the vessel. So the United States Coast Guard is very active, and we hope that you'll look at the Coast Guard's webpage at www.navcen, N-A-V as in Victor, C-E-N dot U-S, coastguard.gov. But you know, one of our auxiliary commanders, Pastor Jason Gant, says go to his website, W6AUX, as an auxiliary, W6AUX.com. And you'll see what the U.S. Coast Guard is doing aboard their vessels, as well as the U.S. Coast Guard is doing on their own vessels. And down in the radio room of those vessels, you'll see modern VHF radios, much like your 2-meter radio, this tuned to channel 16, 156.8, with built-in GPS capabilities. And here it is showing the north up direction, slightly northeast, as that vessel is heading through the water at 2.5 knots. This can be transmitted digitally, too, with those radios with digital selective calling. So the Coast Guard is out there constantly guarding VHF channel 16. And if you're within about 20 miles of the water, including larger lakes, 156.800 FM, not narrowband, just regular FM, like 2 meters, and you'll hear U.S. Coast Guard traffic. 156.525 is digital traffic, and we'll talk later about that. But the Coast Guard's new Rescue 21 system has that capability as well. Now, if you go well beyond line of sight of land, maybe on a long cruise, certainly we always recommend an EPIRB. And you know, although EPIRBs have gone to 406 megahertz digital, they still have a local homing signal on 121.5. So if you have an old radio that tunes in AM 121.5, you might be able to hear a downed aircraft's local homing signal. So this is how the Rescue 21 system works, and it is an effective one covering the thousands of miles of coastlines throughout the United States, and many lakes and many rivers. And all of the Coast Guard aircraft not only have the Rescue 21 system, but they also have direction finding capabilities. And that helps on those bogus calls. They spot them quick. Now, be cautious. There are some VHF radios, much like our 2-meter handhelds. The one on the left is specifically for Marine. The one on the right is for Marine as well as FRS. And if you're not careful, you could actually be transmitting on a Marine channel instead of an FRS channel. So if you got one of those combo radios, which are soon to be outlawed, like the one on the right, be cautious that you dial in to either FRS and stay off a marine band, because we cannot use a VHF handheld for hunting or staying in touch on shore. And in our Coast Guard auxiliary classes, we have boating safety classes. They last about 9 weeks, and we give them all the information about the importance of their VHF radio system. And many of the radios now are submersible. Here's Pastor Jason, the lower half of Jason, demonstrating one of the submersible radios, made, by the way, by Yaesu, and this happens to be the standard Horizon version. And these radios can save lives. Here's a radio recovered after a couple of fishermen were out fishing and their boat overturned. Actual photo of their rescue. I tell you, that submersible radio that bobbed to the surface because it also floats saved their lives, thanks to the Rescue 21 system and the U.S. Coast Guard, with assistance by the auxiliary. The auxiliary with ham radio operators like you. So the Coast Guard Auxiliary made a lot of hams that help out with radio communications, even to the point of staffing some of the Coast Guard communications centers. Now, for those vessels that are going out to 20 or 30 miles, marine VHF is fine. But Sea Area 2 and out on the high sea, Sea Area 3 require more than marine VHF for long range. We know it as high frequency. We see it as a long antenna. Here, the sailboat has a high-frequency, single-sideband marine system. They don't have to pass a ham test, but they do require a ship station license. You see the insulator just to the right of their wind generator. The single-sideband system is one that can reach out literally thousands of miles away, and the U.S. Coast Guard monitors several frequencies on single-sideband. They're there 24 hours a day, listening out of Boston, Chesapeake, Miami, New Orleans, Point Reyes, Honolulu, Kodiak, Guam. And up until a month ago, they were listening on the International Distress Single Sideband Calling Channel 2182. And 2182 is no more monitored by the Coast Guard. So the word went out is, oh my gosh, on single sideband, if I'm far out at sea and weather like this begins to creep into our marina, we aren't going to be able to get help. Well, I'm happy to say the Coast Guard has moved up the band, and we're going to give you some frequency shortly. So if you monitor single sideband outside of the ham band limits, you can tune in to the Coast Guard's Rescue 21 long range radio system. And I'll give you those frequencies shortly. And it's exciting to be able to tune in. So no more 2.182 kilohertz monitored by the Coast Guard. But it doesn't mean that they've stopped monitoring marine single sideband. And when we do our Coast Guard auxiliary classes along with Jason Gant's crew, we're always quick to point out that VHF is used first and then single sideband further away. But again, not this frequency. As of 30 days ago, the Coast Guard has turned off their watch because, like 160 meters ham, it doesn't go very far and is troubled by static. And the big Coast Guard antennas, they only have beam antennas that go down to 4 megs, not 2. So I'm happy to say that if you need help or need a pickup out of the water and you're far offshore, the United States Coast Guard land stations, their ships at sea, as well as aircraft, this is the new channel, 4.125 megahertz, 4125. They also have an additional one at 6215, 8291, and 12290. And go to W6AUX.com and maneuver around, and you'll find that Commander Jason Gant will get you those frequencies. So all of their vessels that go well out to sea now have single sideband, and you as a ham operator can tune in. And if you're interested in joining the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which you can do by going to W6AUX.com, you can operate your own shore station on government frequencies. So the U.S. Coast Guard is looking for more folks to help out on 8 megs, as well as their single sideband watch on 12 megahertz. And again, shore operation is permitted on long-range single sideband working with the Coast Guard if you join up with a U.S. Coast Guard auxiliary, because the further off those boaters get from shore, the higher we go in frequency. 4125, 8291, 12290, the ship stations with sideband have these frequencies built in. Even the big super tankers, even the Queen Mary has the long-range single sideband contacts, and it's exciting on shore to tune in to some of the Coast Guard traffic on long-range 12290 megahertz. And again, all communications to the Coast Guard on single sideband is upper sideband, or lower, always upper sideband. So here we are aboard a boat checking it out. So if all of a sudden the vessel bursts into flames or catches fire, they can send that Mayday call out. We hope that none of you will ever have to hear a Mayday call. So here's our typical single sideband radio. And as you can see, there's 2182. There's the 4125 that goes about 400 miles. There's the 6 meg that goes about 600 miles. There's the Coast Guard's 8 megs. That's a good one, 8291. And here's the one that you can pick up all over the country when the Coast Guard comes on working in distress, 12.290. And again, always upper sideband. So we encourage all of you that if you want to do a little bit more and add ham radio to public service, beside all the other hats you may be wearing, think about joining the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary. It's a rewarding program. So let me now turn it over to, let's go back to, let's see, Bob, we're going to check out your Lab 1. So, Bob, take it away. That's our broadcast regarding Coast Guard Auxiliary. Bob?
That was really great. Let me tell you, that was wonderful. And, of course, who better to do it than Gordon West? Well, we have a guest tonight, W6CEC, and Clayton's been a friend for many years. He uses our products. He's the production manager of the PBR.
Right, Professional Bull Riders.
Well, some people think that's beer.
Half Blue Ribbon, then, right? We get that a lot.
That's right.
They are a sponsor, though.
They are a sponsor. That's right.
You can now have a PBR at the PBR.
That's correct. And we've known each other for a long time, and I always was kidding him about getting into the ham radio. Well, because of Ham Nation, he started watching the programs, and he's W6CEC, and he's just gone wild. And so I'm really proud of what you're doing, and I guess Gordon's helped you a lot with his training.
Yeah, you hooked me up with Gordon in the beginning and said, you got to do this.
Yeah.
And I went through it, did all the lessons, the classes, read the books, listened to the CDs.
That's
and
great. But you didn't,
got my license.
You didn't stop there. Your son also.
My son did it with me and got licensed at the same time.
That's great. Yeah. We're proud of you. Well, let's roll a couple of stills here. We show you what he does. This is from the PBR. You want to tell people what
there's
we're looking
at? There's the Pabst Blue Ribbon can.
There it is.
This is our two announcers, and as you might well know, they're using Heil microphones there. That's the best sound that we've ever had. I don't know who that guy is, but he looks like he's awfully busy.
Yeah, that's great.
That's where I live during the show, and they're my two announcers. And obviously something happened that maybe wasn't supposed to, because turns around, looks like I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
What are you doing there?
Yeah.
And
that's a kind of a wide shot of our arena. That's what our show looks like back by our mixing console, our front of house area.
Yeah, it's really a wild production I've done. As you guys that watch the show, you know my background. I've done a lot of shows, but I got to tell you, the PBR is really intense. I don't know how you do that. And of course, the thing that they did today here at the beautiful Hammonds Arena was, what did they do? Laid 8 inches?
8 inches of dirt over the whole floor. Yep. That's what we do everywhere. We go around making things dirty everywhere.
What amazes me is when you leave, it's absolutely spotless. How do you get that clean?
A lot of sweeping and mopping.
Oh, but it's a wonderful show. So it rolls into your town. You go find it and get there and look Clayton up. He'll be at the back of the arena, and he'd love to meet all the ham friends. That's great.
And usually every market I go into, I carry an HT with me. So I'm on the 2 meter and 440 repeaters in the local area. I always program the radio. I've already programmed it for here in Springfield. And
there you go.
So I had it on and was listening to it all day while I was working in the hotel room. So.
Well, we're glad to have you. You're glad to be able to meet with you while you're here. We have a lot of fun before the show starts. And Sarah is the big Bull Rider fan. So we'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday and check it all out.
Looking forward to it. Can't wait.
Well, I got to play something for you guys. The other night I was listening around with my stuff behind me, and there was this huge signal. I've heard him before, and I thought, I'm going to grab my camera, and I really quickly put this together. So, Dale, please don't beat up on me, because this is not very well produced. But it's going to be very fun for you to hear Germany on all of this old gear. So roll the video, Brian. This is really fun.
But he missed when he was repeating his call sign, Frank. Stand by, Frank. Stand by. Go ahead again, Pat.
Yeah, sorry. E-35.
Woo!
Thank you very much. 5 and 94. Woo! Sorry. Big CA, a private EP over 9, Frank. Sorry for doubling. Kilo Charlie 2, Zulu, Oscar Radio. E-35, Zulu, Sierra, over. Roger.
This is Delta Florida 2, Blue Ocean with company, over.
This is K9 EID, K9 Echo, Italy Delta.
Roger on deck, Kilowatt Niner, Echo, Italy Delta. This is Denmark, Florida 2, Blue Ocean. Thank you very much for calling in. Good 5 and 9, good 5 and 9 by calling in. There's a bit of QSB on the band, so... one moment you may be S9 plus, the next moment S9, but by calling in it was a good S9. The name is Tom, Tokyo, Ontario, Mike. Kilowatt Niner, Echo Italy Delta, this is Delta Fox 2, Blue Ocean, over.
Very good, Tom. Great signal into here today. My name is Bob. My name is Bob, and we're in the middle of the United States in Springfield, Missouri. And we're working you on a 1962 Hallicrafters HT-37, copying you and your friends on a 75A4, and a great signal here tonight. And I'm pleased to be able to work you, Tom. DF2BO from K9EID.
Okay, very good, Bob. Fine on the good old equipment. Sounding very nice over here. So you're not running transceive. You have a transmitter and a receiver. A little report from my logbook, then I got to swing you around the group, Bob. Go ahead.
Absolutely. You're about 10 over 9 here on the Collins 75A4. And, yes, they're separates, Tom. Go ahead.
Roger on that, Bob, but the audio is fine. Good old gear with a nice and clean and distinct audio. Okay, Bob, with pleasure. We're going to swing you around our group. Hang on. Go ahead, August.
Absolutely, yeah. QSL on the 5x5.
It's in broad daylight, so the signal is already absorbed. A logical consequence of the daylight up there in Estonia. Okay, the mic goes down to Italy. Yes?
Hello, Bob. Kilo 9, Echo, Italy Delta. This is Italy 5, Zulu, Sierra. This is a big senior from Missouri. Bob, you're 5 and 9, you're near Florence. Libya is a port, Papa Alpha Tango is a first contact on this band. A contact with you on 75, look at the log, Bob. This is the Italy 5, Zulu, Sierra, back to you, Bob.
Okay, thank you very much. And just in case my friends on frequency do not know, we have the honor to working Mr. Heil. Bob is the owner of Heil Sounds, and Bob, I'm not on sheer audio, but at home on my Kenwood gear, the Heil microphone, the Gold Line, sounds awesome. And when considering Kenwood, I think I always would pick up a Heil microphone. The TR-40 seems to be a very good combination with the TS-990. I know many guys running a TR-40. Together with a 990, and without any exception, they all sound awesome. Okay, Mr. Heil, thank you very much, Bob, for coming back to us. So one company to the other. This year, by the way, is the OptiBeam factory station, Bob. which I own. So two people being in the commercial business, an amateur radio talking to each other, isn't that nice? Bob, a pleasure, an honor. You take care, and a very good night to you. Back to you for any final. Echo Italy Delta. This is Delta Fox to Blue Ocean.
All right, super duper, Tom. That's great. Well, here we are. It's amateur radio, but we're having fun. What can I tell you? And the antenna's working very well over here. I'm copying you extremely well. 7-3 to you and all of your friends, and we will talk to you again very soon. DF2BO from K9EID.
Very good, Bob. 5 over 9. You're definitely now 5 over 9, and I'm about 18 minutes before my sunrise. Good night to you, Bob. Thank you so much for coming back to the call, and until the next time. Kilowatt Niner, Echo Italy Delta signing. This is Delta Florida 2, Blue Ocean with company. Any more, DX?
Is that fun or what? And hey, Gordo, did you like that one?
Wow. They were double sideband or single sideband, Bob?
Oh, a single sideband. He was on a Pro 3 ICOM.
Wow. He sure sounded like double sideband with that wonderful mellow signal. Wow. Great work, yeah. Bob, with old gear. Yeah.
Thanks. Well, that's what keeps me cranked up here. Somebody said in the chat room the S-meter did not. Well, that's one of the things that we need to talk about. I'm going to do a session on this. I never run my RF gain wide open. I always back it off because you get rid of the background noise. If you take it down too far, though, you won't hear anybody. And I set it at a threshold right below what the noise floor is. Now, I ran it back up to see what his strength was. But please, everybody, get used to playing with your RF gain. And we're gonna do some sessions on this. We've got to do more to help you guys and gals because that's the secret of working low frequencies and getting rid of that noise. And we're not talking about noise blankers. We're talking about just playing with the noise floor and the RF gain. That's what that means. But I don't know that the manufacturers don't talk to us about this, but I ran the RF gain down a little bit, and that's why the meter just stayed there. And if you want to see what strength they are, then you got to take it wide open. But that works great. What was really cool about this, if you guys missed it, when Tom turned it over to a guy, he was very weak, and he was in Estonia. Now, when I started listening to them about an hour before that, he was strong. But the gray line, so to speak, his daylight had come into Estonia. And right there at the end, I think you heard Tom say he only had 30 minutes of daylight. And when that happens, the skip goes away, the long-distance skip. And that's the secret of these guys working a lot of DX. They know how to play the gray line. They know when the sun is open at what countries, and that plays a big part in what happens to your signal, because your signal does not go there. You know, you put up a beam and you horizontally and you go, oh, my signal went there and it hits a hill. No, it doesn't. Your signal goes there. And that's the secret is, where is there? What is the angle that it's going up and where it's going to come down? This is all covered in my book very well, by the way. And I'm telling you, we're not reading enough about this kind of stuff. Please pay attention, because that is the key. And it's not power. It's not power at all. It's what are you doing to your signal and making it hit the ionosphere. And that was a great demonstration where the guy from Estonia was almost not copyable. If you listen, go back and listen to the replay tomorrow and you'll hear that. He was there. He was about an S4 or 5 and very understandable. But an hour before that, he was as strong as Tom. And if I would have listened another 30 minutes, Tom would have been like him. But the guy from France was really blasting, or Italy was really blasting through. But they had these monster antennas. I think you saw Tom up in the middle of that. Too much fun. I'm sorry to take all this time, but it's just, oh, man. It's my first love of ham radio, and it's never left me, and I want to share it with everybody. And you can do it with new gear as well as old, but something about the old gear when you crank it up. We'll be doing more of these. I'm glad you enjoy that, and I love the comments that the chat room is telling me that we need to do more. I will, just so I don't want to bore you, but We got lots of stuff behind here. So we're going to go find out what the news of the day is, because we're going to head it down to good old Don. Don, how are you doing?
I am excellent. That's awesome. That's good stuff. I love the DX too. Let's get into the news of the day from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1881, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 11th, 2013. The California Rim wildfire continues, but volunteer ham radio communication support winds down. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, has been following the story and has the latest.
The Rim fire is about 80% contained. That does not mean that the fire is under control, but rather it's not expected that the blaze will be able to move past those areas where the containment line exists. The sheriff's offices in Tuolumne and Mariposa counties have been able to lift the evacuation advisories for several communities. This includes those with several thousand structures that were in the fire's path. It also means that after some 16 days of continuous duty, that the volunteer ham radio operators with Tuolumne County ARES and RACES were able to stand down and return to their normal lives. Ham radio was first asked to assist back on August 19th. That's when the communications was required to the towns of Tuolumne and Miwok Village, which were under a voluntary evacuation alert. Hams also served duty assisting the Red Cross in setting up an evacuation center in the town of Groveland and later at the Tuolumne County Fairgrounds in the city of Sonora.
Full containment of the Rim Fire is not expected until September 20th at the earliest. If you live in or are planning a trip to Idaho and enjoy operating at public service events, listen up. Jim Dameron, N8 TMW.
An Idaho Amateur Radio Emergency Services group will be providing radio communications for that state's Kootenai River Ride to be held September 14th, and the group is in need of additional licensed radio amateurs to assist. A planning session is slated for Tuesday evening, September 10th, at the Bonners Ferry Main Fire Station in Boundary County, and any radio amateur from that area who wants to be a part of this outing is invited to attend. If being a part of a very worthwhile public service is of interest to you, please contact Gary Leonard by email, gary@pvfd.us.
An astronaut aboard the International Space Station has paid tribute to the late United States President John F. Kennedy by flying a medallion to the orbiting outpost that bears the likeness of the 35th President of the United States.
NASA astronaut Chris Cassidy, who is serving as a flight engineer on board the space station, radioed photos down to Mission Control Wednesday, August 21st, showing the medal floating in front of a window with a view of the Earth below. The 3-inch bronze medallion that Cassidy took to the space station was created as part of the U.S. Mint's Presidential Medallion Series. The front features a bust of the late United States President. Its reverse side is inscribed with a quote from Kennedy's 1961 inaugural address.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
When he returns to Earth this fall, Cassidy will deliver the medal back to the JFK Library, where it will become a part of its permanent collection. The John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum is located in Boston, Massachusetts, and has a permanent exhibit devoted to the race for space that began in the 1960s.
Cassidy's amateur radio call is KF5KDR. And finally this week, registration is open for the Western Hemisphere's biggest transmitter hunting event of 2013, and you might become a medal winner there. Newsline's Joe Mell, K0OV.
The mountains of North Carolina will be the setting for the 13th USA Championships of On-Foot Hidden Transmitter Hunting. Fans of this international sport, which is also called foxtailing, radio orienteering, and ARDF, are making travel plans now, and they want you to join in. Organizing the 2013 USA Championships are Joseph Huberman, K5JGH, and Ruth Bromer, WB4QZG. Both have competed at previous USA Championships and earned medals. Setting the courses will be Nadia Charlot, with radio support from Charles Charlot, NZ0I. Nadia learned ARDF as a youth in the Soviet Union and won her first gold medal by competing for USSR at the European Championships in 1984. In 2006 in Bulgaria, she became the first Team USA member to win a World Championships medal. As always, our national championships are open to anyone of any age who can safely navigate the woods. Most will be licensed hams, but that's not required. So encourage your unlicensed but athletic friends and family members to join in. You can watch and learn from the best in the country, as well as visitors from around the world. Registration is now open on the web, and there is an email reflector for Q&A with the organizers. Learn all about the championships and the sport of radio orienteering at www.homingin.com. That's homingin as one word, homingin.com.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Wow, it just struck me how apropos the snippet of John Kennedy's inaugural address and that little piece was on this, the anniversary of 9/11. Wow. Let's talk about another great Ham Nation sponsor, and that is Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks. There are more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals. And since you're a viewer and listener of Ham Nation, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out the service. Now, one you might consider is the one that I've been checking out. It's Steve Jobs. Very, very interesting. This man is fascinating. Very, very good stuff. And you see it on the iPhone, and also I have it on the iPad. So makes it very easy to enjoy these audiobooks. I think my next book, when I'm getting I'm going to tell you about the offer here in just a sec that I took advantage of. I'm getting another book next month, actually in about 3 days. I think I'm going to get something on Kennedy. It's piqued my interest. So here it is. For the listeners of Ham Nation, you get a free audiobook, gives you a chance to try out the service. To download the book for free or any book of your choice, you go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. You sign up for the gold account and you're off and running. Off and running. Good stuff. So again, it's audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. Sign up for the gold account and start enjoying Audible now. I'm loving it. I've got a long commute to work and back every day, and I'm learning all about Steve Jobs, and my next book I think is going to be on Kennedy. So that's the address, audiblepodcast.com/hamnation, and we thank them for their support of Ham Nation. Let's head over to see what Dale is going on. Dale, how are things up in Kansas?
Hey, Don, we're doing pretty good. Like to endorse your comments there about Audible. We also bought that Jobs book recently and have been listening to it on the way to work and on the way home in the evening. We only have a 20 to 22 minute drive, and you get involved in that book, you almost wish the drive was longer. So a very nice way to read a book, especially if you read slow like I do. So very good. And Bob, I really enjoyed your video there. It was outstanding. Brought back memories from when I was like in the eighth grade or freshman in high school. I was born in a small town named Harper, which is down southwest of Wichita. And in Harper, there was one doctor, and his name was Dr. Bush. And it so happened that he was a ham. He's the one that delivered me. So when I was a freshman, we were down visiting my grandmother, and I got to sit in on his shack, and he had the complete Collins line with the 75A4 like you were using there, Bob, and a big three-element beam and a big German dog he called DLK9, and we got to see him work Europe there during the heavy sunspot cycle back in the late 50s. That was fantastic. Well, we've got a couple of videos, hands-on type videos this evening for you. And first thing we're going to do is go north to Alaska and pick up a video from Tom Ruticiliano. He's NL7TZ. He shot this report, which shows the club station KL7JFU and their communications trailer while they were setting up a portable 35-foot tower on a trailer the club built from scratch. Tom used his iPad to capture the video. He also did all the woodwork in the comm trailer. And with the help of two other club members, he did all the welding on the tower. So let's watch Tom's video now.
NL7TZ. On July 20th, 2013, the Matanuska Amateur Radio Association, KL7JFU, participated in the Sutton, Alaska's Emergency Preparedness Show. 14 members of the Mara Club came to participate in this event. In this clip, you will see the setting up of a 35-foot crank-up tower with the tri-band beam on top and the G5 RV. We ran our own generator housed on the same trailer as the crank-up tower. Our communications trailer, we operated on HF as well as VHF bands. You can find us on APRS as KL7JFU-4 and check out our website for club activities at KL7JFU.com. Thanks, NL7TZ.
Well, thank you very much, Tom, for that report from up all the way in Alaska. And up next, do you want to know how to turn a tree into an antenna? Well, Chris Matthews, KF7WRS, along with his XYL Stacy, KG7EUT, and a good friend, Gina Tyler, KD7GEC, turned a Douglas fir tree into a great antenna. It's called the Dougtenna for Douglas fir. And Cheryl, you should pay close attention to this video also. I think you'll be surprised. Let's watch.
A couple of weeks ago, my wife, KG7EUT, and a good friend of ours, KD7GEC, and myself, KF7WRS, went to a ham fair where we learned how to create a shunt-fed vertical tree. We gathered up some materials, and here you can see us prepping our deck screw, and then we needed a ground rod, which we found out of an old chunk of fence. We cleaned off some of the oxidation on that and got the tip of it tinned up and ready for a further soldering. Here's our SO239 connector, and once we got that all tinned up and ready to go, we were ready to put in our ground rod about 2 feet from the trunk of the tree. Be sure and pick a good piece of lumber. We went through a number of them. The soldering iron wasn't quite hot enough, so we pulled out the torch, and that seemed to do the job just fine. Here's Gina pointing to where we needed to go. And there's myself driving the screw into a sap vein. We tinned up our wire and climbed up back up the tree with the soldering iron. Our overall height ended up being about 17 feet, but 15 to 20 feet would do. We ran that wire back down the tree to our SO239 connector and tightened everything up. And there's a picture of our finished product. You want to run that wire about 2 feet perpendicular to the tree.
Alpha Hotel 6 Whiskey X-Ray. This is Kilo Fox 7 Whiskey Romeo Sierra. Yeah, we've got you. Alpha Hotel 6 Whiskey X-Ray. This is Kilo Fox 7 Whiskey Romeo Sierra. You've got about a 5 and 5 in here to Portland, Oregon. QSL? Yep, 73 there, Victor. Appreciate the comeback. That was Hawaii on a tree. Unbelievable.
I want to say a special thanks to Dave, WB7ESV, for his original instruction and for taking the time to teach the class. Thanks, Dave.
That's the Dougtenna. Thanks a lot, Chris. We appreciate your great hands-on video there and hope you'll keep them coming. We're going to wrap up tonight's video segment with our first amateur radio club site of the week. So, Brian, if you'll display k2jji.org, we'll take a look at some of the features. The site was nominated by Edgar Bronco, and the site is sponsored by the Tryon Amateur Radio Club in Fulton County, New York. Edgar likes the site because of the live audio feeds, the shack photos, and all the information in the different sections. This is one of the most information-rich club sites I've run across. There are current videos of interest to all hams, shack photos from most of their club members. You can even listen in on the local repeaters on the site. And if Brian will just click on some of the links up along the top, every one of those is like another website. So it's just absolutely amazing. So, Edgar, we thank you for the recommendation and want to remind you, if you have a favorite site, make sure to recommend it by going to the Club Website of the Week link at www.hamnationvideos.info. Well, that about wraps up the video segment for this evening. We're running short on videos a little bit for next week. I hope to get together with the president of the Wichita Amateur Radio Club Saturday and see if we can do a little bit of video about how hams can use spectrum analyzers. So that should be fun. But if you have a video, please email your link to hamnationvideos at twit.tv. And that will just about wrap it up. 73 from the Yellowbrick Road. And we'll move this buggy on up to Northern Illinois now and check in on the chat room action. Cheryl, the Ham Nation stage is yours. Did you see the sign in the video? Go ahead and take it away.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was really nice. I wanted to say thank you, Gina, for your sign. It didn't go unnoticed, and I really do appreciate it. Thanks so much. Hi, guys. And we're going to move right into the questions here. I'm going to take and see if, Gordo, are you on there with us? Go ahead.
I'm always here, Cheryl, tuned in to you. Go ahead.
And I'm tuned in to you, Guy, because I'll tell you what, I got an email that was written, and this one comes from KE5HDF Ralph, and he goes on to say that he had watched his first episode of Ham Nation, which was 112, and he really liked that part on the RFI. It struck a chord with him and so on. And he had a broad spectrum noise problem. This is kind of a follow-up on this RFI segment that you did. And it periodically wiped out all of his bands from 80 meters to 10 meters, and it was worse on 20 and 40 and things like that. So the noise sounded like a turbine winding up. It was just really terrible, and he seemed to get higher in pitch, and he went on to say a few other things about the noise and so on. But the main thing, it would last for about 10 minutes, and then it would stop and then come back for a total time of this happening intermittently, about for only an hour. So one evening he realized it started after his wife started a load of laundry and this new front-loading washing machine. And he never had problems with the 20-year-old top loader, but this thing started screaming at him on the radio and so on. And he started waiting for the spin cycle, and the noise started immediately. So he stopped the washer, and the noise stopped. So he gambled on a simple fix. Now, this is what he did to fix it, probably based on some of your information there, Gordo. He says he coiled up the washer's power cord as much as he could, about four turns, and tie-wrapped them together. And believe it or not, that stopped the noise, he said. So I guess his noise floor was about typically a five signal strength. And after watching your segment, Gordo, and now it looks like it's working out for him just fine. He says, thanks for all the demonstrations. And he wanted to say thanks to Bob and to George as well. And this is, he says 73, Ralph. And we just want to thank you for sharing that with us, KE5HDF. That was Ralph. And here's a question then for follow-up here for you, Gordo. And this is what it's all about. He says, to track down local noise in a house, do you recommend trying to direction find the noise by turning the receiver in different directions?
Okay, go ahead, and that's Gordo. A good question. Some of the antennas, though, in today's modern shortwave or AM/FM radios are bidirectional. So the loop stick is not a great way. Do it through proximity, and that is the closer you get to what is generating the noise, it'll get louder and louder. So, nope, I don't think you can direction find with the newer radios. The C Crane radios actually have twin ferrite loops at right angles just to minimize nulls. So it's great for picking up sensitive noise, but not for direction finding.
Oh, good. Well, thank you very much, Gordo, for that answer. Hope your weather is better than ours here in the Midwest. It's a little bit thick, the air. It's very humid. So onward to Mr. Bob. I have some questions for you tonight, K9 EID. Bob, on the segment with your radio, your helicrafters and so on, how much power were you running? That came from a Web 7560. He wanted to know how much power you had.
I drive one of the 30L1 Collins amplifiers. I was running probably 300-400 watts, no more. That's usually what I do with them. I'm one of these guys. If you can't do it with 400 or 500 watts, you're not going to do it with a kilowatt. It's 3 dB. It's not worth it. So you got to have the right audio, which we use PR22, which is very articulate in the mid range, and drive a parametric EQ, the symmetrics, and then that drives all of that. You saw right in the beginning where I was patching the microphone in the patch bay, and it just works so well. But running only 300-400 watts, and that was the coaxial dipoles. It was 40 meters, and of course, switched to the east, and that's all we were doing.
Perfect. Yeah, that was one of Ray's N9JA. He had to know what the antenna was, but you got that question answered before I even asked it, sort of like the old Johnny Carson show. I should have held the envelope up to my forehead, one of these type of things. Anyway, also from VE3MIC, also for you, Bob, his name is Mike. He says, do many of the radios in your collection have synchronous detectors? It sounds technical. Can you tell us about that?
No, they don't, Mike. I wish they did. I don't have any synchronous. What happens is that's for listening to AM. It reduces a lot of the fading that you get on AM because of the phase reversal of the signals hitting your antenna at different angles. And I don't have any synchronous detectors here. But one of these days I'll find something that I like really well and make that happen. So nice question, Mike, and greetings to you. Go ahead, Cheryl.
All right. And one last one for you, Bob. I hate to keep firing away, but these were really good ones. Skeeter N5ASH says, is there any chance that Heil Sound will design and market a mic that will interface with iPads and iPhones?
Interesting. George can tell you that. It's coming. we're working on a new little wonderful gadget that's, as I've told you before, I hate the word Bluetooth. Don't write me. I know where it came from. It was a guy's name, da-di-da, in Denmark, da-di-da. I know all that. I don't like the technology. A guy called me today on his Bluetooth phone. Well, I fixed it. And George has been on the beta team. And George, you've been using this thing with your iPhone, haven't you? Isn't that working?
Yeah, I have, Bob. Actually, let me think exactly what I did do with that. I can't remember, but it paired with the iPhone, and I don't remember if it was transmit or receive audio, but it did go one direction with it.
Yeah, cool. So these are coming down the pike. Stay in touch, but it's going to take take away your microphone cable, so you can run around for about 30 feet, and it's all done with Bluetooth, and it will pair with some of the phones. So we might have some nice things coming soon, so stay tuned. Thanks for asking.
Sounds very interesting, Bob. I'm glad to hear that. By the way, we do like your camera angle. It looks pretty good. I don't know what you got going there. Is that a new tripod?
No, it's up on top of the Apple screen. I've got a, I don't know what, it's a 27-inch thingy, and I put it up there instead of having it on the boom. So we'll be playing with it.
Okay, then, and thank you for that. We also have a question here. I'd like to go to Gordo for this one. This person's name is Chumley, no call sign. He says, the show has helped me before with 2 meters a few months ago, and now he's stumped again. He's a fairly new tech and just picked up a used ICOM 718 to reach out and touch someone. The problem is we just sold our home, and they're renting in a strict HOA home for about a year. And he would like something simple for now as we look again for another home and build something more permanent. Suggestions, Gordo, go ahead.
All right. Well, the ICOM 718 is a fabulous, low-cost, 100-watt transceiver. I'd try and get some real good coax, RG, 8X, maybe double shielded, up into the attic area, away from any alarm wires up in the attic, and do a simple dipole, string it out each way. Probably going to require, not probably, will need a small MFJ manual antenna tuner, tune first for maximum noise, then slowly transmit on AM, peak the power out and dip the reflected power down to nothing, and then give it a try. Only problem is it's noisy and attic, so on strong signals, he should get out and no one will know with his new ICOM 718, a great rig with a good noise limitation circuit in the receiver. Back to you, Cheryl.
Super, Gordo. Excellent. Good, good, good. All right. And I promised NT9E Dave that I would make this announcement for him. Tonight, I guess it's brand new. He'll be taking check-ins on 3576, the frequency, on JT65. And that's a digital mode of operation. So for those of you that want to join Dave, NT9E, he will be the net control on 3576. And moving on to the next question. It looks like there is a, I want to try this for you, George. I don't mean to leave you out here. KK4NRX John says, how about opinions on big iron multiband radios like the IC9100, Kenwood TS2000 for more serious HF work? He hears mixed reviews and he's about to buy his first big rig. George.
Well, Cheryl, all of those rigs are a good choice. Take the envelope away from my head. The IC9100 I have not played with. I have played with a 7410, which is a very similar rig, just doesn't have the VHF and UHF in it. And I was very impressed with the 7410, so I would think the 9100 would be great. The TS2000 works well, too. I've had one of those. And currently I'm using an IC7700, and I really like it. But, you know, if you stay with the three big manufacturers there and their better rigs, you can't hardly go wrong.
Very good. Excellent. Excellent. And last, I just want to finish with this question. I get a lot of them in my email inbox for the show concerning the display back here. And everyone asks me, what software am I running? And for the most part, it's really not software at all. It's coming out of the ICOM 7800. There's an output, VGA output on the back of the radio. And that's basically what's coming from the radio. I mean, that's the main display of the radio on an external monitor. That's all there is to it. I just wanted to wrap that up so that there isn't really any special software. It's the ICOM 7800 has all that in it already. So you can do that, and you can put on more than one monitor if you want to, but I think you have to have a signal booster in there with it. I have two coming right out from the radio itself, so I can see one when I do the after show QSO. And that's what I want to do, is invite you to the after show QSO tonight on 3847 megahertz, 75 meters tonight. I'll be waiting for you. With that said, I'd like to wish everybody a great evening. Thank you to all of our hosts for all your answers. Very informative tonight. Have a great evening. God keep you safe and sound. 73 from Northeastern Illinois. Take care.
And I believe the answer is ICOM. And the question was, who has the best mobile analog radios? Let's take a look at that video.
Some great D-Star radios have entered the market in the last year, but let's not forget all the solid analog radios out there. From radios strictly on 2 meters to dual banders with analog capability, ICOM has your complete analog solutions this fall. Check out ICOM's compact military rugged 2-meter IC23H mobile, 65 watts of stable output. Oversized tuning dial is easy to use. It's got 4.5 watts of loud audio and 270 memory channels and multiple scan options. Consider the ICV8000 for your next mobile adventure on 2 meters, 75 watts of output power, a rugged die-cast aluminum chassis, and fast memory scanning with dynamic memory scan. ICOM's IC7000 is an all-mode HF, VHF, UHF mobile. It's a compact radio with a colorful high-res display, dedicated interface keys, and great automatic tuning knob, built-in DSP noise reduction and filtering, and it's popular for de-expeditions and field days as well. Looking for rugged, easy-to-use handhelds with plenty of memory channels, loud audio, and long-lasting battery life? The ICV80 and the V80HD is a 2-meter handheld with 5.5 watts of high power. A built-in BTL amplifier helps deliver 750 milliwatts of loud audio and is great for noisy environments. There's 207 memory channels, and the HD version includes radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and a rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. The ICT70A HD is a dual-band transceiver for classic operation on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Like the V80HD, this version includes the radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and the rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. It's easy to program with a simple keypad, large backlit alphanumeric display, and it has 700 milliwatts of loud and clear audio, 302 memory channels, and fast scanning features. Why not take a look today? Visit iComAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with ICOM, that is for sure. I want you to visit iComAmerica.com/hamnation. A lot more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection is right there. And while you're there, you can enter the ICOM weekly drawing for ICOM swag like T-shirts, hats, and details on ICOM's monthly grand prize drawing for a free ICOM radio. This month, it is the V8000. That's the 75-watt, 2-meter mobile, Sirius radio. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. All the official rules are there. Check out all the previous drawing winners. Sign up. And good luck from ICOM and Ham Nation. We thank them for their support of Ham Nation. Bob, back to you, my friend. Good night from South Mississippi.
Okay. Hey, we got some wire, and I got this little dude here, and I got this little dude. And what do you think, Gordon? You think we can make the tree work tomorrow?
Yeah, I think load that tree up. Put about 300 watts, and you'll be rolling. Okay, I've got to do a Coast Guard auxiliary net, so I'm going to say 73 and smooth sailing. We'll be on, let's see, 72, 78, says the ICOM 9100. Also down on 71, close to 7200 with 5LN. And the weekend, we'll have the IC9100 on the air on 2 meters and 440 and 1270. So have fun this weekend, everyone, on VHF and UHF contest weekend. Bob, back to you.
All right. Oh, good stuff. Well, we're going to go out and put a nail in a tree and solder things, and we got wire. What do you think, Clayton? You think we can make
it? I think we can do it.
That's right. That's right.
We learned how.
That was really cool. That's also covered in my book. The Army did that, believe it or not. It was a page in Army Communications of how to make a tree resonate. So what could they do? They made it happen. Hey, thanks, everybody. I know we went really, really long tonight, but we had so much to do, and I think it was fun. I hope everyone learned something. Nice to have you, Clayton. We're going to go fight some bulls now, right?
Yes, we will.
Don't expect me to get on one of them.
Nor
okay.
Me.
Okay. All right. we'll have some fun this weekend on Route 66. The birthplace of Route 66 was right here in Springfield, Missouri. That's where the idea came from, and it's a great thing. We'll report on that maybe next week about everything. So join us all. Tonight, what's it, 7278 and 7204. This is a night when 20 meters becomes 7204. Since 20 meters is shut down, why Bill and his gang moved down to 7204. I think it's great. And you heard the new frequency on 75, and we'll, of course, be around 3950. So we'll see you all there. 73, everybody. It's been fun. And we have more fun than you guys. And what can I say? Until next time, we'll see you somewhere with all these radios. I think I can get a signal out of here, and enjoy ham radio and entice all your friends to watch Ham Nation. 73, everybody, from K9EID. Bye-bye for now.
Only 83 degrees here in the desert tonight, Mike. Nice here, too, in California. Nice and cold. Let's get this going here, everybody. Hello from Gilroy on 7278. Still Earth. This is...